very dear, dear friend of mine. I think you'll know who he is. I gave him a category from today, and the category I gave him was gambles with high stakes.
Nothing I've been asking for a loan, a small loan. You told me that I was not economically viable. And yeah, I thanked him for 7 years. Excuse me, sir. How'd your loan work out? Did they give you a loan? He must be economically viable. There's a man with a smile on his face. He looks like a happy customer. That's what an economically viable...
Good morning, Winter Park. You're listening to WPRK 91.5. And this is Punkonomics, our weekly AM show, with our host, Dr. Benjamin Balick.
Good morning.
And our guest star. Yes.
recurring guest.
Corey Carroll. And my name is Jesse Velez. I'm also the host of Punkonomics, where we discuss certain topics that affects you and me. And sometimes you just never know when it comes up and hits you right in the face. And one of them is guns. Yep.
Yeah, everybody's talking about it. I realized I emerged briefly from my, prairie dog posture that I take on occasion to stay sane, you know, and noticed that there was a lot of talk about this. Yet another tragedy, of course. We're not going to go over the news. I think people know bad school shooting. This time it's also just some dude, right? I mean, nobody even knows. Or is there? Yeah, you fill it up, because I'll admit, I heard about the tragedy, but I don't know.
I'm kind of in the same realm as you, Ben. I keep the news off. What I do know is this guy, he clearly had some sort of a mental problem. They haven't determined what it was, but I mean, he went. What's interesting here, and we're obviously going to talk about gun control, gun regulation.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be sensitive here, but the gun laws actually functioned this time around. It's hard to believe, but. What this young man did is he went to a Dick's Sporting Goods a few days before the shooting, and he attempted to buy an AR-15, which most people they call it an assault weapon. And he didn't want to have to wait to buy it. There's a 3-day waiting period, and that was enforced. So he actually didn't buy a gun. What he did is he went to his mother's house, and his mom owned a number of weapons, handguns, and assault rifles. And he took one of his mom's own guns and shot his own mother. And then, you know, I think the rest, we all know what happened from there. So it's pretty clear this is an individual that just wanted to kill people.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, I think, you know, I don't want to... We'll go there a little bit into the kind of the sociology of what the hell's going on here. Right. But maybe let's start with... like I said, I heard some of the discussion I kind of caught up when you suggested a few days ago to talk about that. And a lot of it seemed to me rather disingenuous, you know. I mean, obviously you have politicians, it's about posturing, that's what they do.
Right, maintaining their votes intact.
Yeah, I mean, you have to do something, but then do nothing. I mean, you know, that's the ideal political
well, you know,
balance,
right? What's amazing is that, I guess they're just having kind of a rough year, but... the NRA has been oddly silent.
I mean,
they don't have a lot to say this time around, because and I think what it has to do with the fact is that you know, if we're in a mode here in the United States where you have like one mass shooting every 3 to 4 years, the NRA can, you know, come up and, you know, they can do their spiel and, you know, things are okay. But The tempo, you know, with the shooting in Colorado and now in Connecticut, you know, coming so closely after each other, and then that's just a couple of years after the shooting up in Virginia.
And that's clearly, by the way, again, I have to say, I mean, we'll get there a little bit more, but it's going to accelerate. I mean, accept this as an official prediction, and sadly, I've inherited Cassandra's curse from my dad, therefore we always get it right, but nobody listens. Yeah. It's going to be a weekly or maybe daily event in the coming years.
And as a to our listeners, I'm very liberal when it comes to my views on guns, right? Mm-hmm. And liberal meaning not democratic, as in, you know, the way most people here in the United States think liberal. I'm liberal coming from the Latin, you know, liberus, free. I believe that, you know,
and all the world uses that, actually. It's a good opportunity just to tell people don't get confused.
This is educational. Right.
Liberal is free market. It's kind of what moderate Republican and most. Well, the white state Republican Democrats
someone,
are the same.
I would love for someone to tell me where in the history of the U.S. the Democratic Party became associated with liberal.
Right, you know, I mean, because it was very conservative at one point.
Yeah, exactly, they were.
I mean, it was almost an extreme.
Well, there was a lot of switchover if you really look at the history since the 19th century.
But how did they become liberal? How did the word
liberal became associated in America with kind of social democratic, not the Democratic Party, but, you know, somewhat slightly left-leaning capitalism.
Hippies.
Possibly, you know. But yeah, all over the world, liberal is kind of free markets, no government intervening in your affairs tendency. You know, we call the Adam Smith as the liberal economist.
Right. So I'm gonna start us off with some statistics, just, you know, when it comes to gun related crime. First on the defense, the FBI estimates that civilians use guns in self defensive shootings about 16,000 times a year on average, and
that speaks to the argument that I'm surprised the NIRA didn't have, that if somebody who said if the teachers were all armed.
Well, I mean, it goes to the classic.
Hey,
you know,
that's not a point.
It's the principle of counter surveillance.
The Wild West.
This goes to, you know, to an economist, somebody who studies game theory. This actually makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, it's what worked with nuclear weapons. It's what you call mutually assured destruction. You just push the stakes too high, and nobody's going to pull the trigger. And back in the 70s and 80s, when you had all of the hijackings of the airlines around the world, somebody said just give everybody a gun when they get on the plane and you won't have a hijacking anymore.
Though, you know, I mean, almost unanimously security, military, police experts are opposed to that. In fact, I have background in parts of the world that have issues about that. And it's like, it's not done. I mean, you, one of the orders, even if the population is armed, like in war zones, the police and the security will tell them, do not take it out. Just get out.
Yeah.
Dunk on the floor. Mm-hmm. When you have civilians starting to yank out the guns in defense, what you have is another order of magnitude of bodies dropping on the ground.
Well, coming from the, now that you mentioned airlines, coming from that field, you know, we used to get trained every year on safety and security. And basically, you know, like you said, you were basically told, any doubt, get out.
Yeah.
You know, because for pilots, and there's a good reason, if they don't have pilots, they can't fly in the aircraft. Okay, if they don't have the flight attendants, then they really don't have too much control unless they want to start shooting people. Mm. And they won't even have access to the cockpit because now you cannot go in at all. But there was this thing about the pilots having guns. And what a lot of people found was that the cockpit was just way too small to be able to reach over and grab that gun. I mean, by the time you do, you know, certain movements,
yeah,
and I think they counted that as maybe four or five movements before they can actually pull and point.
Yeah, it's just not.
It's just futile.
By the way, again, you can't defend yourself. Just like 100%. Oops. Oh, dear. Mea culpa. My fault.
I'll tell you what we need is we need a Punkonomics. We need a YouTube, like an uncensored edition.
Are we on now?
we need to
Are we on the air now, or what's the
No, we're on the air.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. My fault. I'm reading, you know. I'm used to speaking. By the way, that's another old issue about this fakeness. It's another way we molest our children. You think they don't hear you saying the words that everybody uses with the exception of a few nuns? And I know a couple of nuns, actually, that's used that language, too.
That's another one of my pet peeves, besides doing a research paper, knowing your topic, and not being able to say that you know it. You have to quote somebody else's stuff.
It's another fakeness, you know? So you have the students speak, you know, their own language. How do you think faculty speak? Well, I mean, some of them don't probably curse, but I don't associate with them.
I actually had a pretty good experience here at Rollins. Pretty much all the professors were very...
That's how we speak. Yeah. We're humans, you know, but then the fakeness. Imagine what it does to society when you have to kind of assume... I mean, it's natural. Always have it, but more and more. Where everybody's nobody's speaking their own language, as it were. Everybody's like trying to portray another. Right. And what's the issue here, too? I mean, it's actually not related to these insanities. So as I was saying, but this time in the clean version, you know, we know, security experts know, the whole airport stuff, the liquid invented, take off the shoes, the machines, the naked men, all of that, it's got nothing to do with our security. It's to harass us so we feel, one, harassed, under control, to remind us who's boss and who we are. And then, you know, respect authority, etc., as well as, you know, a lot of kickbacks to contractors, naturally. And to some extent, I suppose the nicest bit about it is to make us feel secure.
Right.
Fake, but feel
false
secure.
False sense of security. Yeah.
But same, and the schools, right? The security in the schools. Security. So these kids today are, I'm familiar with these issues. I'm a horrible critic of the school system. No, not teachers, not the teachers' union. The very fundamental system.
You know, this is a stat I didn't have. Well, I did have, but I left it on my computer at home. I didn't bring it here. I recreated my notes in like 20 minutes before this show. But there's something like 2,800 stabbings in schools every year, and about half of those are fatal.
Wow,
so,
really?
This is what it kind of fascinates me about society. We see a tragedy like Connecticut, and because of you basically, you know, excuse it, but you have a pile of bodies in one place, and it's something that's easy for the cameras to focus on, and we react to it.
Right.
But then when you have this slow attrition, this water torture, right, where you know something like stabbings, where it's like, you know, one every, you know, well, it's actually
the ones that are being reported. Forget the ones that are like in the real inner city. Where
that's just in the school. I mean, once you get 50 yards off school, or you know, a quarter of a mile away on the kid's way home. You know, who knows how many? But I mean, that's and that's, you know, we're gonna obviously get to this, but that's where you get to the, you know, social inequality. You know, you have just the destruction of the family. I'm gonna throw out a few more stats while my voice is rolling. I cherry picked some stats here. I'm admitting them cherry picking, but compare a city like Dallas in Texas, right? Gun ownership in Texas, they love guns in Texas. It's, you know, very high. A city like Dallas, they have half the violent crime of a city like Boston, where gun control is very strict. They have a third of the violent crime as Oakland, and they have a quarter of the violent crime as Chicago, Illinois. So I just rattled off three cities.
No, of course, as an economist, I got to go, okay, what's the... I mean, we know crime and violent crime is overwhelmingly determined by not only poverty, but distribution of income.
Yep, I just picked...
Get ready for school shootings on a regular basis, accelerated basic. They're mall everywhere. Americans by the millions are going to go ape feces. You got it this time. In public.
As a personal note, you know, there are a lot of people out there now that have taken they've taken medications for ADD or ADHD, right? And most of these medications you can't be on forever. You know, you need to be weaned off of them and then put on another drug. Friends of mine...
Of course, it's brain damage if you take them before you're 18, by the way.
Zoloft, that kind of stuff.
Ritalin, Adderall,
right.
Friends of mine, they're actually two brothers. There are three brothers. Two of them had a problem where they kind of had a violent outburst in school. They both had to take medication for ADD. And one of the side effects, I actually looked this up on the internet. One of the side effects, while your doctor's weaning you off these medications, it's a very common side effect. Yeah, to just have a psychosis.
It's well known. That's why it's banned in most civilized places. Yeah. But here, you know, it's great. You drug the kids up.
Right.
You make billions off of it.
Right.
And then, I'll be cynical about it. And then you lock them up in prisons that we call schools. And then we mess with their mind and submit them to bullying and definite mechanisms that work. Usually have been well studied in concentration camps. And I mean, you know, we don't put them naked and machine gun them. You know, not yet. And then we make some money off of that. And then when the bodies pile up, we make some more money off of that. Same right. people, by the way, making that money again and again and again.
Now, one of my friends on Facebook, Gregory Willits, a former, he's a great former Rollins alum. Alumnus.
Yeah, I can't say that word. One of those things.
Yeah, it's Latin. I had to take it for a few. He pointed out. So he claims that the whole of my argument is that there's no border around a city like Boston or Chicago, or you know, just because they have gun control, guns can move in. And that's true. But the thing is that what gun control does is it makes it very difficult for a responsible civilian to own a. You know, somebody who wants to be law abiding, somebody that doesn't want to skirt the edge of the law. They can't own a gun.
Right.
And, you know, again...
That's why I'm against it, though.
A place like Dallas...
Personally, I'm very fearful of position.
A place like Dallas, you can own a gun. So, and guns are a deterrent. You know, I mean, I've often thought about this. You know, if I were to be a criminal, right?
Right.
What states would I be willing to commit crime in? I'll tell you what, I would not commit a crime in Dallas. I wouldn't break into a home in Dallas because I'm going to get shot.
Who the hell knows?
If you go now to someplace like Chicago where nobody owns a gun, you're fine. You know, and the fact is a criminal is always going to be able to get their hands on
them. That's also the problem with dynamics of this policy. I mean, if we ban guns, okay, there's the issue with assault rifles that, like you mentioned, that I believe it's 0.5% of gunshots. So this promotion of, let's ban some really obscene, spoil the fun for people who like to go out somewhere rural, I suppose, and blow stuff up. And I, you know, I appreciate their fun, and I hear them. But maybe... But it's definitely not solving a problem. I mean, a knife can do the job, of course, not as efficiently as a gun, handguns, but there's so many of them.
Look at the kid in Colorado, right? Neuroscience student.
Right.
He only got half of his plan went through. I mean, it was just, people often forget this. He had his apartment rigged with explosives.
Oh, right.
He was going to level an apartment block, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, you know, explosives aren't that hard to make. I'm sorry, people, but if you go spend 10 minutes on the internet, you find out that using commonly available chemicals, it's incredibly easy to make high explosives. All right, there's a reason that they're able to do this in like Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Don't they control already at least?
Common chemicals. You can
household chemicals.
Fertilizers
and such. I mean, famous, you know, soap. Chemic V. McVay, right?
Soap. Yeah. If you have enough, my chemistry teacher in high school. She told me, if you have enough soap, you can blow up the world. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where it starts.
Lot of soap.
Well, no, I mean,
but you know, that ties into a story. I just want to like float it out there. Maybe we can talk again. But there's been some reporting that the army is so desperate over the past years of finding anybody who wants to join it in America. I mean, so really desperate beyond what we know already as being pretty desperate, offering a little money and all those kind of nasty things and hiring in high school and all that stuff. But they're hiring gangbangers and neo-Nazis. By the thousands. In fact, there's like...
Really?
So in Iraq and Afghanistan, there's literally this culture of people who are openly, you know, like internal of a prison, like most of us only saw it on movies, right? And what a lot of these kids are doing on both sides is training, good training, and weapons. And apparently there's a lot of stuff being shipped back home.
Yeah,
so I'm thinking some high explosives would come in quite handy in the
The military has a very poor record of being able to control its toys.
All military.
Yeah.
All military. It's ridiculous. You have to be in the military to see just how inefficient.
Yeah. I mean, if I remember back in like 2005, we actually, it was kind of an embarrassment. Nobody really said a lot about it. We actually lost an entire F-16, a relatively modern fighter plane. The Chinese managed to buy it. Mm. And I figured how that went down, but they bought an entire... They literally just bought it. And I'm not sure how you get... I mean, do you just fly it out?
Florida gun show, maybe.
Right. But, QBC, right? In the middle of the night.
When it comes to gun control, I've got a little experience now in manufacturing. When it comes... Let's say you do ban guns. Let's say you have, like, first of all, a gun repurchase. Greg said, you know, gun purchase programs were effective in England and in Australia. Look, we have at least 260 million firearms here in the U.S., all right? We're approaching one per civilian.
Yeah.
All right. Does anybody really think that we're going to be able to go out and repurchase 260 million weapons? And now if you're an economist, you have to do the cost benefit. Okay, what does that cost you? And what could that money actually be better spent on?
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, how many more lives could you save by, say, malaria, you know, just make malaria vaccines available.
How about a functioning healthcare system so that people with depression and feelings of anxiety and violence can actually get treatment? Right. That's one of the prices we pay. This is the concrete, horrible price in blood we pay for having currently ranked conservatively 36th in the world. Anybody who's seen healthcare in other parts of the world knows how bad ours is.
Again, for those who are naive about this, weapons are very easy to make. Some of the people who are, you know, they got very pro gun control. I'm not really sure what they, you know, where they think these guns come from. If they're just like unicorn factories that look like it's like Apple's manufacturing them, and there are lasers and whatnot. These are, you know, we started making guns a long time ago with very crude machinery, right? I mean, for people who know tools, you go to Harbor Freight, you buy yourself a manual mill, $300-$400, right? Expensive, granted, but you can resell it for probably 90% of that. You spend, you know, if you know what you're doing, it takes 3 or 4 hours to make a weapon for yourself. If you don't know what you're doing, you're going to have to, you know, read around on the internet for a couple of days.
Yeah, you're obviously a bit of a gun geek.
No, I'm a nerd. But I mean, my point is that if a criminal wants to get their hands on it, they're going to. I mean, it's like regulating drugs, right? Which I think anybody, even people who believe that, you know, we should outlaw marijuana, cocaine, whatever, even they'll admit that we have catastrophically lost the war on drugs.
Within a month that when they started the war.
I think some people, I genuinely think some people were in denial. They're like, oh, we just need to throw more men at more resources. And I
there's always true believers.
It could have been an employment scheme, you know.
It's a great employment. It employs an enormous number of people. Something like 60% of the African American prison population is in jail for a marijuana related charge.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
That's why all the world talks about this as a new form of slavery, as a massive crime against humanity. It's against international law, by the way.
I mean, what's interesting about some of these prisons, you know, a lot of people call Visa, I shouldn't say Visa because you call any 800 number, right, for customer service or whatever. Mm. A lot of people have that in their mind. It's like, oh, I'm calling India or something like that. Mm. A lot of times you're calling a prison right here in the U.S. Mm. A lot of, a lot of work gets outsourced
for that
to prisons.
Sort of thing. Mm.
And the prisoners, they make a little money. They make like 25, 35 cents an hour, like way less than, you know, you would make.
Thank God, it's even better than immigrants, you know?
Yeah, it's better. I mean, it's better than outsourcing to Malaysia or China. Or you even pick a country, you can't find wages that low.
No, history teaches us, you know, look at that stuff.
Oh, and by the way, that's your future. The prison, well, a lot of people forget a lot of these prisons, it's not run or owned by the state. A lot of prisons are privately owned, privately run. The Department of Corrections is kind of a bit of a joke.
For-profit justice.
They'll charge $3 or $4 an hour for that labor.
But going back to the whole gun situation, what hasn't really been talked about either is that the reason why we're seeing a lot of these, violence and stuff in school and some other places, it's also because of the way our culture has changed. I mean, we've always had guns, okay?
Yeah.
But when you look at, say, at the generation of my parents, the ones that are like 70, 80 years old, that generation, if you look at the media, what they were seeing was just weapons were for war, for military, you know? It wasn't this... glorizing the gangbangers or going out there. Oh, I got a Glock.
American,
all that kind of stuff. I mean,
James Cagney, like classic gangster movies.
But they're pretty cool.
That
was very minimal compared to the bombardment that we're getting now.
Yeah.
I mean, if you channel surf, I mean, whether it's on the internet or on a regular TV, I guarantee you will see something about guns within the first five hits.
It doesn't take long.
Versus before, it wasn't like that either.
Well, it's a fetish. First of all, it's a fetishistic part of the culture. It's like if you're a Christian, you know, a cross is more than a geometrical sign to you.
Right.
If you're an American, a gun is more than a firearm to you. It's really... Maybe we should go to the feminist analysis of this.
In all fairness now, it's popular around the world, right? I mean, you've got games like Call of Duty, which are very popular, right? Very popular.
My good friend, find that game.
Hang on, Ben. This could go on a huge tangent.
Avid video gamers arguing about the culture, the comparative culture.
That's a popular game around the world as well. And, you know, guns, it's a popular thing. I mean, and I think what it comes down to is the psychology. It's this ability to project power, which in effect is an ability to feel like you're in control. Mm. Right? So, you know, and now we can go to a greater theme of the show. Why do people need to feel like they're in control? Maybe they just don't feel like they're in control.
Now we're getting really philosophical. Yeah. And it's not a bad thing, but the need for control, it's actually, let's just maybe just shine that one narrow light on the aspect of this that is related here. It's part of the psychosis that's going on now. We are not in control. We are getting... Looking for a good word here. Not treated well. It starts with an F.
I can think of one with an F for you.
I know. Yeah, an S. I can think of an S. I can't think of a non-dirty word to use here. We are being economically abused.
Abused.
Right. You know, our savings are taken. Our programs that we've funded are being raided by war, economic warlords, what have you. You know, all that stress, the Tea Party anger, the Occupy anger, all of that, which is quite justified, is all a little bit about this loss of control. You know, you work like a dog all your life, one guy doesn't like you, he destroys you. I mean, it's like the pre-market years, before when an aristocrat could just kill you because he didn't like the way you looked at him, you know, in a bar, and it wouldn't even be examined. Incidentally, talk about media. I'm going on a tangent, so reel me back in. Trayvon Martin, right? I'm so bad with names. Who was killed?
Sanford.
Oh, such a horrible story. Everybody kind of wow, you know. But the Malcolm X, what's it called? There's an organization who looks at these things, and you should know about stop and frisk. You know that in big cities, mostly New York in America, you know, if you're black or brown in the street, you're gonna get stopped. And you know, 3% of the people stopped on the stop and frisk have guns or any kind of weapon on them. The others are just harassed, etc. The point being that since that poor kid was gunned down, you know, in legal lynching in Sanford, the police have gunned down. God, I don't have the number on the tip of my tongue, but it's shocking. I mean, we're talking maybe 100. I'll be happy to look it up, you know, or certainly well more than 50 like him have been gunned down. Mostly it's the police that does it, not like, you know. Police are gunning down black kids around this country like it's duck season.
Right.
You know, but nobody talks about that, right? So I do want that at least, you know, before we're done, we look at the crisis we're in. Yeah, it's a violent society. Yes, famously, remember the Bowling for Columbine, which was overall a good movie by Michael Moore. I always have mixed feelings. I'm kind of, I think he does great stuff, problematized stuff, raises muck. That's great. It's agit propaganda, basically. It's not, you know, serious stuff, but it's good. But there, as in many other movies, he was completely wrong. Charlton Heston was right. When talking about their representative of NRA, right? Why is it here? Why nobody else, though more and more in other places that are also in kind of post-capitalistic decline? So why? Because very violent, a humongously violent history. And then, you know, I don't like racist video games. I like trolls and stuff, you know. I mean, I like the fantasy. I'm old, whatever, right? But let's not argue about video games. That's not the culprit. That is the phenomenon, you know. You wonder why we have violence rising since 2000, statistically, very importantly. How about dramatic separation, you know, 90% going down the hill and the rest going up, and then some, right? How about the distribution of income and injustice? And above all, how about war?
Yeah.
Hello?
Right.
We're bombing. I mean, whatever your politics, you know, we've directly killed hundreds of thousands of people over the past 12 years in the Middle East.
I think hundreds of thousands. We can put this in the millions by now. I think it's safe to put it.
Yeah, I was being very conservative. I'm talking directly hit by American munitions, and you probably will get 800,000 probably there.
Yeah.
If you're talking about the, you know, the
indirect
disease,
consequences.
By the way, boycotts, like, you know, Clinton killed just as much as Bush, you know, simply by denying medication, you know, so kids with infection would just die in hospitals, by the way. But whatever you think, oh, we had to, because otherwise he would nuke us. I'm a bit sorry for you, but in that case, but still, whatever, I'm not going politics here. The violence is daily. We are taught it is the solution.
Yeah.
Right. So what do we expect? The movies, you know, stand up and support the same message, but it is a general movement. I think it's part of an imperial decline. It's kind of one of the things that comes back and bites an empire in the rear. Can I say?
Yeah.
Rear is definitely derrière. All right. Is this when you build yourself on violence upon others, it comes. And if you notice around now, what you see is you see the upper classes in America basically doing to the middle class of America what it has been doing to people around the planet for 500 years.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, I'm looking upper class America obviously doesn't exist.
World's only so big.
Right, yeah, we run out of slaves. You know, we need to enslave you now too. I'm so sorry. And so go back at the future, right? Or Democrats, Republican, it doesn't matter. It's like, what? You have to be more competitive. You have to work. You want a job? You better work like a Chinese slave laborer. So yeah. I'm hoping the Chinese slave labor will uprise because we seem to be a little bit.
That's interesting. You know, China, by the way, and this, yeah, this goes back to the recent news story or the topic at hand, the shooting in Connecticut. Just like a couple of weeks ago, a guy went into a school in China and killed 20 kids with an axe.
Yeah, yeah. There's a rise of it.
So
in many
I mean,
places,
you know, yeah. Substitute. Go ahead and substitute. You know, gun for an axe. I mean, you know, you're going to have axe control. You know,
the guns are efficient, though. I think that's the one place where I really have a hard time being, despite my kind of anti-gun control bias to some extent.
You can say guns are efficient, and this is true. You know, they are very efficient when it comes to killing. But you know, you go a step beyond that, and bombs are efficient. You know, the kid in Colorado, he could have, you know, just as easily put a bomb in that theater, and instead of the death toll, I think he killed 12 people and injured 60. I guarantee you, he would have thrown that death toll over 100 if he had decided to use bombs.
But I think the
gun thing for him was, you know, probably some sort of a fantasy, like this Rambo
thing.
Well,
that was part of his psychosis. I mean, that he was basically strictly just collateral. Trying to be creative in the way that the Joker or some of those characters in Batman, where the violence is not one time it's over, it's more kind of like an enigma, what's going to happen next.
Right.
That's what he was trying to do. Now, this other individual, the one that killed his mom, he was completely a different kind of nutcase. I mean, and I don't want to say nut because that would be unethical for me to say. But the truth of the matter is they're both have two different kinds of psychosis. Mm-hmm. And you really can't, and I'm totally for getting rid of guns, so don't get me wrong, but you really can't say that it's just the fact that they can get a gun or it's accessible. The truth of the matter is there's a lot of people out there that are mentally ill. They're not being diagnosed or recognized that they need help. You know, our healthcare system basically provides that platform. I mean, Reagan alone, I mean, if you want to talk about how bad we've been doing with economics and with healthcare, Reagan alone tossed out a bunch of, mentally sick people back when he was governor. I mean, literally tossed them out on the street because of economics.
Part of
you know, and that's the same thing that we're doing right now by not providing health care, by not opening up the door and say, hey, we got some sick people out there or taking care of our own. I mean, people are getting desperate here.
That's linked, you know, I mean, there's often a statistic that's always confusing, and I've actually re-looked it up at least quickly about Switzerland. Everybody has guns in Switzerland, but they don't have the shooting sprees that we do.
Right.
They do not have shooting sprees because they're not, you know, they have more stability. Their family has not been attacked by corporate America and destroyed. You know, they have friends, etc., etc. This thing that I tend to focus. But Switzerland actually, at least used to, not too long ago, have humongously high gun death rates. Like, I remember in The Economist, this is maybe 10 years ago now, so I know, you know, great old time flies, but you're looking at, it's a good place where we had, right? Camera, right? We do have cameras. One day we'll make a video product. You know, America is there. The rest of the world is like barely registering at the bottom, you know, in terms of how much people killed by a firearm, whatever, suicide too. And Switzerland is like half America. So high. Again, I don't know, maybe. No. What's going on? They all have guns in the house.
Yes.
Yep. It's part of their kind of military reserve system, you know, thing that they've had. No war, 800 years. You've got to give them that. Or 700, something like that. But the problem is that when, you know, a domestic dispute, you know, before you start you have to be pretty damn crazy to, you know, slice your mother's throat with a knife.
Right, right.
But a hysterical teenager with an itchy, twitchy finger could accomplish the same thing, you know, and you get really angry and you know if you're going to beat each other up. No, but if there are guns in the house, it's just, that's what I meant with the convenience. But of course, that's a good example of statistics. It's so, watch out, what are you looking for here? I'm talking about all gun deaths. Right. So, you know, all the accidents that we have in America, you know, the kids that are, oh, look at my dad's gun, boom, you know?
Right.
That sort of thing.
Well, that's a good segue right there. you know, if we're going to talk about politics is the art of compromise, I say. Mm. So if you are going to move forward with some sort of gun regulation, I looked around. Norway, in my opinion, has a very good model. Norway, their gun ownership is actually on a per capita basis higher than what it is here in the U.S. The rate of gun-related crime in Norway, it's either, I forget if it's half or a quarter, but in any effect, it's statistically
people
substantially
people understand we're talking about
lower.
A rural, mountainous, beautiful,
right.
Roar kind
and,
of
by the way, with a significantly lower, I'm sorry, which way am I going with the Gini coefficient? It's a better Gini coefficient, I forget. Yeah. Where's it? Which way am I going
it's
on
the scale?
It's such
a weak measurement anyway, you know? Equality. It's a much more equal country, naturally. Scandinavians tend to be
totally
more equal.
I just totally immensely psych myself out. But it's more, much more equality in Norway. But their gun control laws, in order to obtain a firearms license, there are two classes, which isn't really important, of firearms license. You need to apply. You need to join a local gun club, which gun clubs are. Shooting is like a national sport in Norway, so gun clubs are everywhere. Mm. You need to train at that gun club, which basically just means target practice.
They go, by the way, cross country. You've seen that maybe on the Winter Olympics.
That's right, yeah.
They cross country
sport.
Skiing and then
sport.
You shoot there. Yeah, they yeah. dominate that and they yeah. do it all day long.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good life, man.
I've heard that's very difficult, actually.
Yeah, I'm
it seems
sure it
simple.
Is, yeah.
But
I know cross. I'm an alpine skier since walking, more or less. But cross country, I did a couple of times. The thing is, it's grueling. It's like marathon. It hurts.
So you have to join it. You have to apply for a gun permit. You have to join a gun club, and you have to train several times a week using a weapon you rent from the club. And you have to qualify. And after 6 months, you're allowed to buy one firearm. And then you're allowed to buy one firearm every 6 months to a year, something
any
like
kind,
that.
Any kind, by the way, since so much focus
okay,
is
so
now on the kind.
They, you can purchase mm-hmm. basically anything but a fully automatic weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they might have a restriction on the length of a barrel of a handgun. It can't be under a certain length. But yeah, you can. It's more or less in line with what we have here in the U.S.
So the difference there is basically they have a process, a lengthy process.
It's a lengthy process,
and they have the training.
The training, and I think that's as somebody who's very who's very liberal on gun control. I think it's actually very important that people who own a firearm do get training on it. And you know, one of the reasons why I'm still an advocate of keeping automatic weapons illegal, right? A lot of people have this fear. A lot of people have this fear of automatic weapons. What people don't understand is that automatic weapons are pretty much useless. I mean, the military, infantry, you know, they don't even run their weapons on automatic.
Right. I was wondering, in America, you switch it onto automatic? You never do. You're not supposed to ever, unless panic or something.
Fully automatic.
Always boom, boom, boom.
Well, it's actually not even in panic. And this is interesting, a bit of firearms history here. When the AK-47 was designed, it was an automatic weapon. And it was originally, this is actually still the way it's designed, the Kalashnikov, right? When the safety lever, there are three settings, safe, fully automatic, and then semi-automatic. If the soldier was in a panic duress and went to depress the safety lever, it was designed so it was far easier for it to be semi-automatic than fully automatic. Fully
automatic. You finish a clip in 3 seconds flat.
Fully automatic, it fills a very niche role, and that's suppressive fire on the battlefield. In all honesty, if...
When you're not aiming, in other words, right? You're just shooting kind of over the...
It's not even really meant to hit a target. So we're kind of getting off topic. But a fully automatic weapon is basically useless. No reason a civilian should have
it. It's in order to play Batman in the backyard, essentially, right? I mean, I'm not mocking. I mean, I'm sure it's a lot of fun, to do that sort of thing, but
soldiers barely use it. It has very little tactical use. But when it comes to, I do believe that civilians, if they do own a firearm, they should get more training on it. A lot of people who own a firearm, they probably couldn't hit the broadside of the barn. They might be more of a danger to themselves.
Right. And I think that's basically key here is that... there's no enforcement as far as training or education behind the guns. I mean, I used to go hunting with my dad, but my dad pretty much taught me every single thing that had to do with shotgun, with rifle, and a gun.
Just
I mean, breaking it up, cleaning it.
Basic things, don't look down the barrel when there's something in the chamber.
Right.
Don't point it anyway, even if it's under any condition of people.
And with that being said, let's play a song for the audience out there. They're probably crashing into street lights and stuff like that, going like, what's that? It's about gun control and all that.
I think the boomtowns are not like money.
reform, a lot of government loan. I'm worth a million in prizes. Yeah, I'm through with sleeping on the sidewalk. No more beating my brains. No more beating my brains. With liquor and drugs. With liquor and drugs. Well, I'm just a modern guy. Of course I had it in my ear before. Could have lived for long. Could have lived for long.
All right, that was Iggy Pop with Lust for Life, and here we are back at Punkonomics with Dr. Benjamin Balick and Corey Carroll, and my name is Jesse Velez. We're always here every week on Fridays from 9 to 10 a.m. discussing some topics that normally not discussed by your local media or your news people, like MSNBC, Fox, and
clowns.
The one with the C and the NN, whoever they are. Anyway, going back to Gun Control, we got a phone call. One of our listeners, special shout out for that person out there. Sorry, we got disconnected. I had to go outside and let one of our DJs come in for the next show. But
we're not entirely sure how the phones work.
Exactly. We're going through some changes. What can I say? But anyway, going back to gun control, our caller really liked the fact that we are addressing the gun control issue, and we're not, you know, talking about let's take away the guns. You know, we've been a little bit more rational of, you know, what is the source of the problem instead of taking away the toys from the kids.
Thank you. That's the issue. I mean, I just want to jump out and say thank you to the caller, because that's
one day we will be set up here issue. To take calls. Yeah, properly.
Now, remember Facebook if you like. Try and spread it off on Twitter too, and things like that. In the sense of giving us feedback, which I really want. Give us. We're getting from some.
Right.
Just join us on.
And that's on Facebook, Punkonomics.
Punkonomics. Everything. It's basically, there's a domain is punkonomics.org. Any kind of Punkonomics. There is a dude who had a Punkonomics account in 2007, I think. So sorry. Hey there.
And we also have the podcast. And videos, hopefully soon.
Yeah,
in the near future,
getting there. Right? It's just hard to find time in this, juggling jobs. So anything else that this person?
Basically, she agreed with what we were saying. I mean, it's not a matter of taking away the guns. It's about finding the source of the problem and making some changes. And of course, she agrees that the way things are right now is what we were saying when we went off the air. We're going into a culture that's going downhill very quickly, and everybody's panicking, and there's no control. We're losing control as a society.
So, you know, it's good. And I'm happy, I mean, because I did find when I started to listen to the media a little bit about it, it seemed all about the details, which are important, you know. Maybe we need to hash out some kind of compromise. Maybe there is a need to, like Corey was just saying, a degree of limitation, necessary training, blah blah blah. But the bottom line, I think, of the violence, the instability is endogenous, as we say. It's within the system. It's growing out of the choices we make, the economic, political, social systems we have, the schooling, etc., etc.
And as a qualifier here, my comments regarding a little more control, requiring people to get training. You know, I mentioned that now just because of it's opportune to mention it now. I don't for a second believe that, you know, that control, that training is going to stop the next mass murderer. If anything, what, you know, that control and training will do is it'll help prevent, like, an accidental discharge.
Right.
You know, somebody's shown their gun to a friend or something like that, and they accidentally
shoot. And there's a lot of those, right?
And, you know,
shockingly
a lot. There's a shocking number of those, right? I mean, it would be like maybe make it so you have to have a little more training in order to get a driver's license. You know, I mean, it's the same argument. You know, you're not you wouldn't make that argument just because there's one drunk driver. You make that argument because of the truth is that there are an enormous number of accidents every year that are accidental and cost a lot of lives.
Right.
So, I mean, and that's the argument I would make for, you know, there's a have a little more training involved if you're going to obtain a weapon.
No. But this whole and what do you think really this whole so automatic weapons, which really.
Yeah, and you know the
and the big the, clips, right? There's the, another thing the that they're talking about. I can see that
the,
as maybe
the NRA doesn't really even debate the automatic weapon thing. It's kind of like a moot point. I don't think anybody's really going to say, "Oh yeah, you know, we need our freedom. We need our automatic weapons." Then you get into a gray area like semi
fight off the black helicopters.
Semi-automatic. Now the black helicopters always win. You don't play enough of these video games, Ben. The black helicopter always wins.
Yeah, see, I know all about you dragons.
You gotta run away from the black helicopter. You get into a gray area like first I'll go to magazines. You mentioned high capacity magazines. Okay, maybe we outlaw it, whatever. Magazines, if you ever look at one, it's a piece of sheet metal with a spring in it.
Right.
Okay, so, you can regulate it. Is that going to stop somebody who wants a high-capacity magazine? No, it's not going to stop them. These are easy to make.
In fact, the drug war, it might actually be a form of, first of all, it's a kind of a well-accepted, kind of a majority of America thinks you're right to want this kind of stuff. It's American like apple pie. Yet the government is not allowing you. Look at all the circus with like gun rights going on. I mean, it's like silly, right? Obama's going to take your guns away. Please. And the zombies are coming too. Oh dear. Do you know the
U.S. Army?
The world was supposed to finish at 8:12 today.
Yeah, the U.S. Army, though.
That's right.
Has, no joke, they added a section to their training manual for zombie survival. I just find it to be very interesting. I swear you can Google it. The Army training manual has a section dedicated to zombie survival.
Listen, that's another story. Apart from hiring like gangbangers and white supremacists to their ranks, they also allow all the nut jobs like Colorado evangelists, the racist, nasty ones, and make the distinction. Right. I'm not besmirching all religion here.
Yeah, not like
going into the Air Force base, and instilling anti-Semitism and hate of Islam in the kids before they just showed up, and of course with full support of the brass and everything.
In all fairness, I've run across quite a few military personnel in my day, and there are a lot of really good and well-intentioned people.
Naturally,
it's just absolutely. It's a very large it's a huge organization. It's bigger than a lot of countries, and with size, because you get problems with management, and the military.
Yeah, all armies in the world are well known to be extremely inefficient, and they're very hierarchical, which doesn't allow for the flow of good information. You wouldn't run a software company like that, or not for long, but. It's things that we talk about all the time. Right? The people are people. Who won't go to the army? There are different reasons. Increasingly, parts of the army. But it's the system then that a lot of people do not join the army anymore for perfectly good reasons, that I sympathize with very much. You have wars that are very different than perhaps in some sense. So it's a systemic failure, not individual failure. In fact, it's one of the most obnoxious, to somebody who's staunchly anti-imperialistic such as myself, one of the most vile things is to hear soldiers constantly being blamed by the same people who sent them there.
Right, yeah. It's incredibly hypocritical. You're a soldier, right? You joined Army, Marines, whatever. And you land in Afghanistan. What, are you not going to shoot?
No, you're going to turn psycho. Right? Everybody turns a little psycho there. You are burned for life. This is never going to go away. You will never sleep again. I'm not talking about the ones who go crazy and kill civilians or kill each other or whatever.
It's a great segue. This is a good clarion call, really, for national mental health care awareness. We have a tremendous number of soldiers coming back, lots of multiple tours of duty. This is, a lot of them, they have post-traumatic stress disorder. Some people think that's bogus. I'm sorry, you're wrong. That is very real.
Right.
Right, and those soldiers.
Do people even hang out with a vet like for half an hour of a recent war before they say that it's No, I guess it's the same kind of people that say that poor people are lazy because they never saw one up close.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and the reality is these people do need help. There are going to be consequences, and it's not just going to be them. I mean, there are going to be ripple effects. There are lots of people because of this inequality. Lots of people need help. Many different forms of help. Mental health care is just one of them.
Yeah. No, they come back from these wars. They make money for.
We're not living in the 1800s in the Puritan America where you're on the frontier and you have to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. This is not the same society anymore. Not the same dynamics at play.
That's why we don't have any more muskets.
No, but another thing. Apropos, I love the boot because it's like the bootstraps. We don't have the bootstraps. What we have, most of us, is the boot on the back of our necks. So, you know, sure, just like the right. third world, for, if you will, for 500 years. So it's not a matter of how can I love, oh, I teach students about underdevelopment, colonialism and stuff, make me popular among some, but it's the truth. you know, they always come back, or some of them come back and say, but how can we help these poor people? I say, well, you could start by taking your boot off the back of their head and letting them get up. So we are now experiencing the same thing. It's stacked against you.
But they're not going to do that. They're comfortable having their foot on their neck. We're really good, foot rest.
And then you have the kind of a moderate spiel that is given to you in school, how, you know, peaceful resistance and how, you know, you think anybody got anything from bosses by asking nicely ever in history since Sargon of Akkad, you know, the first empire, 2300 BC? No. I mean, does it have to be bloody and violent? No. But does it have to be powerful? You not ask, you
right,
take.
Right.
No civil rights, no human rights, nothing by asking.
Hey, but they're still pushing that trickle-down economics, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're at the end of our show, top of the hour here on WPRK 91.5. Winter Park, the voice of Rollins College, the best in basement radio. And we will be back next Friday at 9 o'clock.
Rain or shine.
Yeah, rain or shine, or wherever else. You know, hopefully we can open up the door and get into the studio next week. Anyway, folks, have a great weekend on behalf of us three. Yeah. Happy holidays,
Happy whatever makes you happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Happy winter solstice. Happy the world didn't end.
I mean,
yeah.
Mayans
pointed,
you know?
Yeah.
We can worship God as the Divine Mother, through her lightning voice.